Welcome to Torah Simecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Racheli Lofglas, and today we will be studying Sefer Ezra, Perek Gimel. Yesterday, we learned about the Aliyah movement that was a reaction to the Cyrus Declaration at the very beginning of his Persian Empire in 539 BCE, and how those refugees who returned to the land of Israel actually went back to their original towns, the land of their inheritance, the properties that were originally divvied to them by Moshe Rabbeinu and given out by Yehoshua. These people actually pioneered a community that had not been properly settled in the land of Israel for almost 70 years. Today, in Perek Gimel, we're going to focus on the grassroots movements of these individuals and what resettling the land was like. So a couple things to think about. We've been emphasizing that the Jews saw the opportunity to return to the land as a chance to rebuild somehow a semblance of the state of Judah and revive the Jewish nation. But what you have to ask yourselves is that true? What difficulties do you think they're going to encounter if that's their mindset, given the fact that Cyrus only granted them the ability to go back and rebuild the temple and to return to a time period of sacrifices? Is their desire to regain some sense of sovereignty actually legitimate? And keep in mind what purpose they're setting up for themselves when returning to the land. Is that going to set them up on a trajectory for success or not? Okay, let's begin the perek. Essentially, the perek divides into three sections. The first one is what happens when they first get there. Perek Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, Vayigah HaChodesh HaShvi'i, the seventh month arrived, which, if we're counting by ordinal numbers, means that the Jews at the time had a sense of the biblical way of counting from the month of Nisan, which is back from Sefer Shemot, was what we were told is the mitzvah incumbent upon us to do for counting. So it's the month of Tishrei, which is the seventh month, which we know was the month of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Ubnei Yisrael ba'arim, then the Jews are living in their cities that they were sent back to. Vayasfu ha'am ki'ish echad el Yerushalayim. And the people all gather together as one in the city of Yerushalayim. It wasn't a city at the time, in the area of Yerushalayim. And the language ki'ish echad is reminiscent for us of the language back in Sefer Shmos, Perek Yutet, when the Jews gathered surrounding Har Sinai, kind of showing complete unity at the time. The same thing here, that echo is a sound of yore, showing us the achdut, the unity that the people had. Pasuk Bet gives us a list of all the people that returned to Yerushalayim and what they're going to do. And the two names that are important for us here are Yeshua in Pasuk Bet and Zerubbabel. Yeshua, as we said yesterday in Perek Bet, is going to be the first Kohen Gadol in the new temple, and Zerubbabel is the grandson of the last king they ever had, which is a scion of the family of David. And what do they do together with the Kohanim and all the other people that came back? Vayivnu et Mizbach Elokei Yisrael. They build the altar for God, lehalot alav olot, to give sacrifices to Hashem, kakatuv b'Torah Moshe ish Elokim, just like it says in the Torah. Pasuk Gimel tells us that they established the altar on the old foundations from the time period of the first commonwealth. And then it tells us why. Because they were fearful of the people of the land. And they give korbanot to Hashem. They bring sacrifices. And it lists the types of sacrifices that they brought day in and day out. The Mefarshim there have a debate. Why are the Jews rebuilding an altar before they actually build the temple? It's almost like if you were to build a brand new house and you pick out like your kitchen sink and your wallpaper before you even finish the blueprint for the house. So there are a couple answers that are given by the Mefarshim. The first one I want to focus on is Rashi. Rashi, the 11th century commentary, says that the reason that the Jews built the altar before the temple was this way the other people would not taunt the Jews about rebuilding the temple. They were fearful that when the non-Jews would see that they were building something new, they would assume it's some kind of a fortress to go and rebel against Cyrus the Great. So instead, if they see the Jews burning sacrifices, these non-Jews in the environs of Jerusalem would realize that the Jews were doing this really with the permission of Cyrus, and they would hesitate before taunting them, because Cyrus gave them permission for return to religious sacrificial worship, and that's why they're sacrificing. The Ramak, the Ibn Ezra, on the other hand, comments that since the Jews were afraid of the neighboring people, they weren't sure what their agenda was or how they would feel about these returnees, they would quickly build the altar and bring sacrifices so that Hashem would aid them against these potential enemies. But that seems to show that they're building and giving sacrifices only to ward off or fend off danger from potential enemies. And there's a, you know, an existential question of whether or not that's the right reason for building sacrifices. Is it okay to give sacrifices simply to make a point to other people? And that's a whole other discussion, but definitely something to think about. Let's get back now to the words of the Psukim. Pasuk Gimel tells us that they finished, like we just said, this Mizbeach, the altar. Pasuk Dalet, Hey and Vav, tells us that they actually begin construction on the foundation of the temple. They begin to prepare for the foundation of the temple. Pasuk Dalet, Vayasu et Chag HaSukkot, since it's the month of Tishrei, they're keeping the holiday of Sukkot, just like, you know that they have to from the Torah, but it makes it seem like they haven't kept Sukkot like this in many, 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 many years. Pasuk Hey, and they gave Korbanot, not just the Korban Tamid, which is the daily sacrifice, they also gave the regular Korbanot on Rosh Chodesh and on all the other Chagim, and anybody who wanted to bring a Nidava, just a volunteer Korban to thank God or have a different perspective, people started bringing sacrifices almost like it was just routine. Pasuk Vav, Umiyom Echad Lachodesh Hashvi'i Hechelu, and we're told that since the first day of the month of Tishrei, they have been giving these sacrifices. And then the very end of Pasuk Vav tells us, Vehechal Hashem Lo Yusad. By the way, parenthetically, we're told that the foundation of the sanctuary has not yet even been laid, which, what I said initially, is very, very strange. How do you have an altar if you don't have the rest? The next section, Pasuk Zion to Yud, basically the first half of Yud, shows us what they're doing in terms of the construction. Vayitnu kesef lachotzvim v'lacharashim, they give money to pay for the woodchoppers and the plowers, umachel v'mishta v'shemen, and they feed them and they give them to drink and they give them oil. Latzidonim v'latzorim, they hire Phoenician workers from the Lebanese forest to help them chop the wood necessary for the temple. Lahavi atzei arazim, to bring cedar trees from Lebanon, El Yam Yafo, through the port of Yafo, Kirishayon Koresh Melach Parasalim, because they have legitimate permission from Cyrus, who is overseeing and has the jurisdiction even in Lebanon for these forests. Pasukhet, Ubashana Hashenit, and in the second year, which is really just about 7-8 months later, because the year begins in Nisan, so about in the month of Iyar, Livoam et Beit Halokim Yerushalayim, since they've arrived, Bachodesh Hasheni, in the second month, which is Iyar, what happens? Zerubbabel, who's acting as governor, and Yeshua, who is essentially the Kohen Gadol, and all the other Kohanim and Leviim who are coming back, what do? I'm in the middle of Pasuk Chet, Vayamidu et ha-Leviim miben esrim shana v'mala. They appoint Leviim from the age of 20 and up, linatzeach ha-melech ha-Beit Hashem, to oversee, like project managers, the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. Pasuk Tet, Vayamod Yeshua v'na v'chad kamiyah, and all the Kohanim stand, linatzeach ha-osei ha-melecha, to make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to, all together. And finally, in Pasuk Yud, we're told, with all the working together, Vayizdu HaBonim et Heichal Hashem, that they built a Yisod. They finally managed to put together this foundation for the Beit HaMikdash. The third part and final part of Perek Gimel refers to the emotional status of the people now that they're finally on their way to building the second temple. I'm in the middle of Pasuk Yud. Vayamidu ha-Kohanim melubashim v'chatzotzrot. The Kohanim come standing girded in their silver trumpets. V'ha-Leviim bnei asaf b'mitzaltayim. And the Levites are standing with their cymbals, their musical instruments. Lahalel et Hashem, to sing halal to Hashem al yidei David melech Yisrael, with the words of King David from Sefer Tehillim. Vayanu b'halel u'bahodot l'Hashem, and they're singing and they're crying to Hashem with thanks and praise. Ki tov ki li'olam chasdo, woe is Hashem and his greatness, because his chesed is forever. V'kol ha'am hiriu trua gdola v'halel Hashem, and the entire nation is blowing shofar and trumpets and singing and dancing. Why? What are they so elated about? Al husad Beit Hashem, because finally they have consecrated the foundation of the Beit HaMikdash. And then the perek ends with a little bit of a cacophonous sound. Pasuk Yud Bet, but there are also many Kohanim and Leviim, v'rasheha avot haskinim, and the elders of state and the elders of the different shvatim, asher ra'u et habayit harishon, the ones who had seen the first temple before its destruction and now are much older and they remember it, biyazdo ze habayit be'enehem, at the foundation of this new second Beit HaMikdash, when they see it with their own eyes, what is their reaction? Bochim b'kol gadol, They are really crying. V'rabim b'tshuva b'simcha l'harim kol, and at the same time, there are many people celebrating. This cacophonous sound is very confusing. And the final pasuk of the parak tells us, v'ein ha'am makirim kol tshuvat ha'simcha, the people could not distinguish between the joy and the musical sounds, l'kol b'chi ha'am, to the sadness and the cries. Ki ha'am miriim tshuva g'dola, because the noise is so loud. So loud, the parak ends with the words "V'hakol nishma ad lemerachok," that the sound reaches until very, very far away. Which leaves us with like an ambiguous question: how far did Cyrus get the message that the people are not on the same page? Is it the non-Jews who are in the surrounding areas that hear that some of the Jews are celebrating and some of the Jews are upset? Why are they upset? Is it because they recognize that they're building a foundation and a mizbeach for sacrifices before everything else? Is it because they're missing the rest of their people? Or are they crying because they recognize that the stature of the second Beit HaMikdash is not going to be anywhere near as beautiful and large as they remember from the first Beit HaMikdash? So let's pause for a second before we deal with those questions and recognize that the building here of the second Beit HaMikdash, or at the beginning of it, very much resembles the construction of the Solomonic Temple 500 and change years earlier. And essentially what's going on here is that one of the reasons why the Jews potentially waited 7-8 months to start the construction of the temple is because they're mimicking Shlomo's Beit HaMikdash, which also began in the month of Iyar. Another thing that's similar here is just like in Shlomo's Beit HaMikdash, they set up the Levium to sing with their instruments and to sing the words of Hallel, the same thing is happening here. Just like on the Solomonic Temple, David HaMelech, who had been good friends with the Phoenician king, made sure that his son Shlomo, when he built the Beit HaMikdash, would use the resources from the northern country, from the northern neighbor of Phoenicia. The same thing is happening here, that they're bringing wood from the Lebanese forest. And lastly, just like we see the first huge holiday celebrated in the first temple is the holiday of Sukkot, and Shlomo makes sure that the mitzvah of Hakel, of the king, reading from the Sefer Torah publicly on Sukkot happens, the Jews now, in this story in Perek Gimel, seem to be mimicking the same concept. So we see that there's many ways that the process or the procedure of setting up the second Beit HaMikdash under Yehoshua and Zerubbabel parallel the events and the construction of the first Beit HaMikdash under Shlomo. And we have to think to ourselves, why are they trying to create these parallels? Probably because they want to emulate the pomp and circumstance and the beauty and the grandeur of the first one. But we have to ask ourselves whether or not there's a downside in trying to emulate Shlomo Beit HaMikdash. And in answering those two questions, we have to think about what is the relationship now between the returnees to Judah and the native people that are living at the time in Judah. And finally, now that we're at the end of Perek Gimel, what do you anticipate is the progress thus far? What you're seeing happening, the way they returned, the way they reacted, the way they settled, the way they started to build both in order to give sacrifices and also the beginning of the foundation of the temple, is that what we would have hoped or expected to see upon the return in the second Beit HaMikdash? Apparently, the returnees and the native people of Judah don't seem to have such a great relationship, considering that the natives are going to taunt the Jews about the building, which is why they began with the construction of the altar. So since they seem to have a relationship that's not so perfect, the Jews are probably slowed down now in their progress of building a temple because they're looking to appease the potential taunts from the foreigners. Based on the first three prakim of Ezra, we see that things are progressing well. These Shavei Tzion, these returnees, have already laid the foundation without any trouble. They've built the altar and they begin to give sacrifices. They're receiving lots of gifts we saw from Persia, and we saw also from other nations, and even the Jews and the royal treasury. But it does appear that the Jews are building at a steady pace, besides some of the distractions that we're seeing are slowing them down. The natives are probably taunting them. And remember what we said in Perek Bet when we looked at the number of returnees, the majority of the Jewish nation stayed behind in Babylonia. Maybe if all of the Jews would have been here and helped participate, then the building would have gone at a much quicker pace, and we wouldn't have been left with these questions of what is the relationship like? Are they going to manage to build? Thank you for studying together. The Eloi Nishmas. Rose Foreman, Rachel, Rezo Rachel, Bat Aryeh Leib, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel Bat Shlomo. Have a good day.